Hi, this is Jim from Safety Wars. Before we start the program, I want to make sure everyone understands that we often talk about OSHA and EPA citations, along with some other regulatory actions from other agencies, legal cases, and criminal activity. Everyone is innocent until proven guilty in a court of law. Proposed fines are exactly that, and they are often litigated, reduced, or vacated. We use available public records, news accounts, and press releases. We cannot warranty or guarantee the details of any of the stories we share, since we are not directly involved with these stories, at least not most of the time. Enjoy the show.
This show is brought to you by Safety FM.
And from the border of liberty and prosperity and the highway to north, this is Safety Wars for Thursday, October 3rd, 2024. How's everybody doing out there? We had a glorious day here today, weather-wise, in the Northeast. At least where I was at. No end of the summer activities out there. We're getting the boat taken care of. I have a small pontoon boat. I basically launch it in April, and I keep it water until this time of year. So, that's what we do around here, and it's always fun getting that in. So, making sure all the streamers are on and everything else. I just got in to whatever it is we're calling this. Just got in. Okay. All right, there we go. All right, I seem to be on the air over at Safety FM. Let's turn on some studio lights. I came raging into the studio. All right. So right before airtime, it came out that the Longshoremen Union has reached an agreement down there. And, I don't know. We'll see. I came in about 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time today. We're going to talk a little bit about that, here. A lot going on. A lot going on. Okay. So, let's go. I didn't even have time to really, someone else is driving. I'm there on the phone doing this stuff. So a historic, and this is from ABCNewsGo.com. Dock workers' strike suspended, the union says. A historic United States port strike has been suspended, according to the International Longshoremen's Association and the U.S. Maritime Alliance. A tentative agreement was reached on wages and extending the master contract until January 15, 2025, to return to the bargaining table to negotiate all other outstanding issues. Effective immediately, all jobs actions will cease and all work covered by the master contract will resume. Well, we'll see how this goes. Delay is what it comes down to. I hope they get their stuff resolved. Now, as far as everything else goes, people are in panic mode here between the ongoing recovery and cleanup down in the Carolinas, especially, and Florida and all through there. It's really we'll see where this goes here with the everything. We'll just see how it goes. We have one of my neighbors is with the militant wing of the Salvation Army, and she went down there to respond to the emergency for the Salvation Army. We'll see what information she has when she gets back. Over 200 dead here so far. I think the number is going to go higher with this with dead and missing. Yes, it is seltzer water I'm drinking here on the air. All right, going through here. So here's a story I found quite interesting here. Silver lining. Costco expands Doomsday lineup with a new product after Gold Bar demand exploded with customers spending $200 a month. $200 million a month. Precious Metals joined the retailer's meal prep kits for the end of days. Doomsday preppers can now expect to rush to Costco as the store has revealed a new product. Joining the chain's lineup of precious metals, the wholesale retailer is now selling bars of platinum after their 1 ounce gold bars sold out in a few hours. Pretty good looking gold bar here. Now, I'm not an investment dude, all right? I don't have a license or anything with that. But platinum bars, unless there's a new use for them, I was always concerned not investment grade. Because if you look back in the 2009, 2008, platinum was very, very expensive. Now we're talking like $2,000 an ounce, roughly. Now it's at about $1,100, and palladium, which is cheap, about $300 an ounce, $400 an ounce, is now more expensive than platinum. Silver, high silver prices, $31, $32 an ounce here. So, I'm not an investment guy. Don't play one on the radio. We used to mention these on the air all the time. Nobody was really interested here. But again, the Doomsday Prep. So Costco previously made headlines in connection to products focused on the end of the world, where shoppers noticed Doomsday meal prep kits on shelves. Meal buckets, which cost less than $100, are set to last for 25 years and come with 150 servings of easy-to-prepare meals that just need water to make. The retailer also sells a $6,000 prep kit with 600 cans of food. U.S. Sun has reached out to, right now I'm reading this. So I tell you what, unless you're faced with a catastrophic situation like they're in the Carolinas, Western North Carolina especially, there's nothing you can do with that. Everything's gone. It's kind of hard to prepare for that. But for the actual regular emergencies that are out there, for example, what I call a scenario, right? Scenario 1, 0 to 24 hours. Scenario 2, 24 to 72 or 96 hours. Then scenario 3 up to 1 month. And then scenario 4, which is extended, right, over 30 days. Very, very difficult to, once you start to get over 30 days, once you start to go over 5 days, 3 days, kind of hard, right? And the other thing is this, that they're seeing. A lot of those areas, where are we? If you're in the northeastern United States, you're getting into the peak of the fall foliage season, unless it already passed. I was in northern New Jersey today. Beautiful. I mean, really, really nice with the fall foliage. So these folks were going out there to North Carolina to examine fall foliage, going out there, peaceful hunting, fishing, maybe end of the year type, maybe summer activities. I tell you what, the water on the lake in northern New Jersey, very warm today. There are people out there swimming, and this is October 3rd. They're swimming in New Jersey on a lake without wetsuits. Unbelievable. People are swimming on those summer sports maybe and whatever, and then they get whacked with this. So if you're going to be going away for a week, camping, fishing, what have you, you're only going to bring maybe 2-3 days worth of food. Maybe you're planning to make a grocery run in the middle of that, unless you're my friend Frank, who, if you want to know when it's going to rain, ask Frank when he's going to schedule vacation. Because I tell you what, I don't know a better predictor of weather than my friend Frank that I went to high school with. Than his, every time every freaking time he schedules a vacation, he's out there and there's a rainstorm, like extended. But anyway, unless you have someone like something like that, I mean, you're not going to carry a month's worth of food. Well, guess what? Those people are trapped out there. No, 2, 3, 4 days worth of food. It sucks. But anyway, precious metals, you don't know. You know, it's. I've never heard of anyone having a problem getting rid of them, is the whole thing. So here we have more on Helena has become one of the deadliest hurricanes in the modern era. There have been at least 216 deaths in 6 states, and this report was as of 4 hours ago. This is 8:12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. There have been at least 213 deaths and 6 deaths as a result of the storm, whose flooding, wind, and storm surge inundated communities from the southeast and northern Appalachians. Many of the people are still unaccounted for, and they expect the death toll to rise. Okay. Oh, by the way, Yankee Mets are on, playing the Brewers, so you're going to hear some yelling and screaming and wailing and gnashing of teeth, depending on how the game goes in the background. This story is from dailymail.co.uk. Heart attacks are once thought of a disease of age, but worrying new data shows they're increasing in young, healthy adults. Roughly 0.3% of Americans aged 18 to 44 had a heart attack in 2019. By the last year, that rose to 0.5% or 1 in 200. While that may seem like a relatively low number, it represents a 66% increase in cases in just 4 years, which doctors are calling alarming. So, I don't know what's up with that. It seems to happen right around, COVID, I don't know, maybe that has something to do with it, maybe it doesn't, I don't know. Prosecutors working on the... Oh, P. Diddy. We're not talking about P. Diddy here. Okay. Dark side of new Meta smart glasses. Harvard students reveal how Mark Zuckerberg's creepy spectacles can be used to instantly find strangers' names and addresses. So, basically, this is what it is. You put on the glasses, right? Right. Two Harvard students have taken the device's privacy-invading capabilities even further by building a modified version called iX-Ray. The creepy system uses AI and facial recognition software to instantly dox people's identities. And in an astounding clip, the students go up to random strangers and quickly identify their name and all other personal details, including their home addresses, work history, and names of their parents. Scary, because basically Meta debuted its smart glasses in 2021. Concerns have been raised over the ability to film people without their knowledge. Well, this is what I tell people. Assume you're being filmed. Where I am, the projects I am on are all filmed. That's the way it is. Get used to it. But this takes it to a whole new level with that. You have like no privacy with this stuff here. Scary thing, especially if you are a member of a vulnerable community, like female, right? This is scary. Okay, what else we got here? Tentative dealer, Eminem is going to become a grandfather. Eminem has revealed his daughter is pregnant in a sweet video showing the rapper receiving a custom football jersey with grandpa on the back, right? The rapper 51 dropped a music video for his new single, Temporary, featuring a scene with himself and his daughter, Haley Jade Scott. In the cue scene, Eminem, real name, Marshall Mathers, sits on a set of stairs on a porch with Haley 28. Suddenly she hands him a custom Detroit Lions jersey that says grandpa. Maybe I need to get one of those custom. I'm wearing one. Always. Always on the air. Even Jay Allen said, you're wearing, no, you see me when we were doing the last conference call, we were on his show, the great rated R safety show, and he says, you wear that all the time? I said, every time I'm in the air, I wear it. This they've added Star Wars, and there's been an analysis. High budget, scrap projects, fan backlash. It's been 12 years since Disney brought Star Wars and its galaxy far, far away, arguably, has too many broken toys. Well, let me comment on here with this. This is what it is. It's too much of a good thing. Right? Yeah, and you can run out of ideas here. This is what happened to Star Trek. That's why we didn't have Star Trek episodes from 2004, 2005, 2004 until 2017. They had to take a break. Because we had Star Trek The Next Generation pushing into Deep Space Nine, pushing into Voyager, pushing into Star Trek Enterprise. And we had a couple of movies thrown in there to boot. Too much. I think that's what's going on with that. Yeah, something I do know about. Let's go to our first commercial break here, and we'll do it.
In the professional safety community, communication and planning are just a few keys to your program's success. The question many practitioners have is, where do I start? Dr. Jay Allen, the creator of the Safety FM platform and host of the Rated R Safety Show, has built a global foundation to help you along the way. Go to safetyfm.com and listen to some of the industry's best and most involved professionals, including Blaine Hoffman with the Safety Pro, Sam Goodman with the Hop Nerd, Sheldon Primus with the Safety Consultant, Jim Pozell with Safety Wars, Emily Elrod with Unapologetically Bold, and many others. As individuals, we can do great things, but as a team, we become amazing. Dial into safetyfm.com today and surround yourself with a powerful force of knowledge and support.
Want to avoid hefty OSHA fines and keep your team safe? Let's dive into the General Duty Clause. The General Duty Clause, Section 5, A1 of the OSHA Act of 1970, is a catch-all rule to cover unregulated hazards. Employers must keep workplaces free from recognized dangers that could cause death or serious harm. For OSHA to cite you under the General Duty Clause, they must prove the following four things. 1. The employer failed to render its workplace free of a hazard. 2. An employee was exposed to that hazard. 3. That hazard was causing or likely to cause death or serious physical harm. And 4. Feasible means exist to free the workplace of the hazard. Employees aren't off the hook either. Section 5B mandates they follow all safety standards. Both employers and employees must work together to maintain a safe work environment. Examples: think lifting above shoulder height repeatedly or working without proper support. Stay proactive. Monitor work areas, apply the four-part test, and you'll prevent those nasty citations and keep everyone safe. Need help? And more information? Contact Jim Pozell and the Safety Wars team to help you prevent workplace incidents. Conduct safety audits and training. Contact the Safety Wars team at jim@safetywars.com or 845-269-5772. Visit us on the web at www.safetywars.com. Let's build a safer workplace together.
OSHA recordables, catastrophic losses, environmental disasters. You want answers? So do I. This is Jim Pozell with Safety Wars.
That's my daddy.
Whoa. So here we are. We are moseying on over to the Department of Labor. They came out with a couple of news releases today and over the last couple of days. Unemployment insurance, weekly claims. In the week ending September 28th, the advance figure for seasonally adjusted initial claims is 225,000, an increase of 6,000 from the previous week's revised level. Remember, all this stuff always gets revised. I don't know what that, what it goes. Maybe it's because to make people look good. But this stuff is always adjusted here. So beware here. All right. Department of Labor investigators find a Nebraska Grain Cooperative exposed workers to combustible dust, multiple hazards at a Hemingford elevator. Hemingford, Nebraska. Federal investigators found light. And by the way, everyone's innocent until proven guilty, and most of these penalties are proposed. Right? Like in this case. So that may be vacated. That may be. No. I didn't know there was words to this song. But anyway. All this stuff may be vacated, maybe litigated, maybe, negotiated downward or upward. Who knows? Depending on what things are. I've seen it negotiated upward, right? So federal investigators found life-threatening hazards at a Nebraska grain cooperative where workers face risks of fire and explosions due to the company allowing the buildup of combustible dust and failing to maintain effective dust control systems, leading to more than $500,000 in proposed penalties. Now, let's talk a little bit about dust hazards before we go on here. Now, you're going to say, well, really? We're going to talk about dust hazards? Yeah, we're going to talk about dust hazards here. Basically, this comes down to this. I'm getting back to the software. Okay, here we go. All right, so basically, with the dust, what are they talking about? They're talking about organic dust, generally speaking. It could be metals also. Anything flammable. Now, people say, well, metals are flammable, Jim? Yeah, metals are flammable. If they are ground down to the right level, I'm not going to tell you how to do that on the air. I have a pretty extensive experience with aluminum fires, so we'll leave it at that point, specifically dealing with powdered aluminum. So once you grind and mill aluminum down, we're talking aluminum, right? Aluminum can I have here on the air. So what happens is this. Something has a nice surface area, all right? You have a surface area. And if you go and you grind that down, you increase those grains have more surface area than the original brick. So if you had a brick of aluminum and you are going to grind that down, the surface area increases. That means that there is more opportunity for chemical reaction because you grind it down. Once you start to get into very fine powders, we're talking like 0.28 microns or lower, usually for aluminum, that's what the magic number is. Now all of a sudden it becomes a powder, it becomes explosive, it becomes very flammable. Now you're going to say, Jimmy, you're full of guvno. Oh, we've all witnessed an aluminum fire. Jimmy, what do you mean? We've all witnessed an aluminum fire. Solid rocket boosters, right? On the rockets. Those solid rockets or solid rocket boosters, all of them are made up of ground aluminum, ammonium perchlorate, ground in a very fine powder, and a binder material, right? And what happens is it's like making bread. They have this stuff, they put it in a mold, like a bread mold, like something's huge, right, with this. And they put it in there, and they let it cure, and that's called a rocket motor, and then they ignite it. But once you ignite it, there's no going back. It's got a solid rocket fuel. It's one way of doing it. So if you have that's one way of making solid rocket fuel. So if you notice around military bases and in the area outside of San Jose, California, southern San Jose, over by Morgan Hill. A lot of those areas are impacted by rocket fuel engines and rockets because you have a perchlorate issue in the ground. Oh, yeah. So that's where that comes from. Now, on Air Force bases, wherever they have solid rocket fuel. So getting back to an aluminum dust or a dust hazard, here we have with grain, right? Grain is flammable. What often happens is that you have an accumulation of material, right? And then what happens is there's an event where the material gets dislodged and comes down, right, in a powder form, right? And what happens is it hits an ignition source, and before you know it, it catches fire, and you have a grain explosion. You have a organic dust explosion. All the same thing, just different contexts of where what you want to talk about it. So here we have, investigators from OSHA responded to a complaint of an unsafe working condition at a grain elevator and opened its inspection March 2024 under the agency's Regional Emphasis Program for Grain Handling Facilities in Nebraska. And here I'm clicking on that, and that's from October 1st, 2009, and that is the directive CPL 213-001I, capital I. Regional identified, this is from Region 7, and this this instruction applies to the Omaha area office. Specifically, OSHA found the company permitted more than 1/8 of an inch of grain dust to accumulate, it's here, in priority housekeeping areas, such as the bottom belt tunnel around the elevator legs. The agency also found duct tape wrapped around the dust collection system located in the bottom belt tunnel in a makeshift attempt to repair the dust collection system. This reduced the system's efficiency and increases vulnerability to failure. If left unchecked, grain dust can ignite in seconds and cause deadly fires and explosions. Grain dust fires and explosions. Let me go back here to the screen. Yes, my vision does report. Maybe I should exit out of that. All right, yes, I went for an eye exam yesterday. That was up on the screen. All right. And why don't we do this? Since everything is coming up here, let's go back to here, and let me close out everything that needs to be closed. This way you're not seeing all this. Yes, I had an eye exam yesterday. All right. New eye doctor, real good guy here in New City. New City Eye Care, I think that was the name of the place. Pretty good place. But anyway, I'll give him a free shout out there. OSHA cited, grain dust explosions. Here it is. OSHA cited Legacy Cooperative for 2 willful and 22 serious safety and health violations and proposed penalties totaling $536,965. So, not conducting regular inspections on equipment, failing to certify completion of preventative maintenance, not complying with permit confined. They have permit confirmed. What the hell? It looks like something I would write. Including developing procedures for entry operations that included hazard evaluations, atmospheric testing, rescue procedures, monitoring, and training. Exposing workers to fall hazards from unguarded stairway holes and lack of handrails. Failing to close electrical openings and improper use of flexible cords. That is extension cords, folks. Not providing a forklift training as required and failing to label containers of hazardous chemicals properly. Through its alliance program, OSHA has partnered with the Grain Handling Safety Coalition, the Grain Hand Elevator and Processing Society, and National Grain Feed Association to address hazards, reduce risks, and improve safety and health management systems to help prevent life-altering injuries and fatalities and identify the critical steps for handling grain safely. And, of course, they have 15 days to do. Let's take a deeper look into this. So this was issued 923. So they're a couple of weeks behind here. Okay. Citation 901, type of violation serious. This is 1910.28, walking and working surfaces. Each employee is protected from falling into a ladder floor or a ladderway platform on a hole by a guardrail system and toe boards erected on all exposed sides except the entrance to the hole, where self-closing gates or an offset must be used. On or about, blah, blah, blah. Were exposed to falling hazards while employees were accessing and working adjacent to Pit B, and that during entries, the pit door is open, and there is no guard railing or other conventional fall protection means to prevent someone from falling into the entrance hole. And that was 11,524, citation 1, item 2, 19, and it is employer did not ensure that each flight of stairs having at least three treads or more for risers have a stairwell. $9,200. Citation 1, item 3, type of violation serious. Did not evaluate, 1910-146, did not evaluate the workplace to determine if any spaces were permit required. Okay, that's 16,131. You mean they didn't go in there with a freaking letter? That's a freaking letter in a file somewhere. Are you freaking kidding me? 1910-146 D3I, under the permit required confined space program, the employer did not develop and implement the means, procedures, and practices necessary for safe permit entry operations. 16,131. So what would the hazard be here? I'm thinking it's going to be a dust hazard, which means Jimmy would have to probably get out the textbook and look up how to, I don't remember how to calculate it. But there's a calculation for it. Under the permit space system, the employer did not develop and implement the procedures, means, and practices necessary for safe permit entry operations, including but not limited to purging, inerting, flushing, or ventilation. At $0. So, what was the chemical? Employees were exposed to atmospheres containing phosphine, pH 3. It's a chemical formula, phosphine. I'm not familiar with it. When entering pit 3, and they did not make sure everything was in there. Abatement certification is required. That was zero they got them on. Citation 1, item 4C. No verification. The conditions are acceptable for entry. Citation 1, item 5A, that was 16,131. Reevaluate the permit space in the presence of any authorized entrant or that employee's authorized representative who requests that the employer conduct such reevaluation because the entrant representative has reason to believe that the evaluation may not have been adequate. So, employees engaged in grain operations were exposed to hazardous atmospheres and other recognized hazards. When entering Pit 3, the employer failed to promptly reevaluate Pit 3 once they received notification of hazardous conditions, including the detection of phosphine above the monitor alarm thresholds when employees entered. 16,131. Next one, citation 1, item 5B. Did not protect employees, $0. Citation 1, item 6A, rather lengthy one, 16,131. No procedures for summoning rescue and emergency services. And citation 1, item 6B, no designated emergency service. They got them for zero on that. Citation 1, item 7, serious. The entry permit that documents compliance with the section and authorizes entry did not identify the required information listed below. So basically, I don't know what kind of permit they were using, but it was missing 13 different items right on that. And that's 16,131. There's got to be some bigger ones here. Citation 1, item 8, type of violation serious. No training for their employees, 16,131. Citation on item 9, no fire extinguishers adequately in there. Not readily accessible, 6,913. Citation 1, item 10, serious. That was for 11,524. No training. No practical training. Nothing. Nada. Zero. Zilch. The employer did not develop and implement a written housekeeping program, 1910-272, 16,131. Citation 1, item 12A, type of violation serious. Preventative maintenance procedures in grain handling facility were not implemented to provide regularly scheduled inspections. That was 16,131. That's the maximum. The employer did not maintain the certification record of each preventative maintenance inspection. Again, you got to have a written inspection. If you, it's not enough to say, yeah, I inspected it. When is there a written inspection? Can you prove it? And the answer is no. You got a problem. Real simple. No, nothing on there. Citation one, item 13. Preventative maintenance procedures in the grain handling facility were not implemented to provide lubrication and other appropriate maintenance in accordance with manufacturer's recommendations or as determined necessary by prior operating records. Again, nope, procedures, 16,131. Citation 1, item 14A. Was an electrical type thing, 1910-305. Opening through which conductors under cutout boxes, cabinets, or fittings were not effectively closed. So you have punch-outs and a lot of things. And you need these punch-outs right in the junction boxes and in electrical panels. And guess what? Switches, things of that nature, they got punched out where you could now put wires through them. Once you, right, you can't have open punch outs. They got to be closed. I don't know how you would do that other than reseal them. I'm sorry, other than replace them. Type of violation, serious, 1910-305. The raceway is fastened as its outer end and other points as necessary. Raceway was not connected to the electrical enclosure, was exposing energized conductors. Zero on that. Flexible cords and or cables were used as a substitute for the fixed wiring of a structure. $6,913. Basically, extension cords. Right? No. This is actually interesting. The employees were exposed to fire and shock hazards in that a flexible cord was plugged. Again, abbreviations here, right? And this is a formal legal document. You have spelling issues here with this. Flexible cord with plugged cord W plugged into the grain into the grain dryer monitor located directly in front of the grain dryer. The flexible cord was used as a substitute for permanent wiring in that the flexible cord was being used continuously for a period exceeding 90 days. 6,913, citation 1, item 16. This was a HAZCOM violation, 1910-1200. Labeling. Label tagged or marking containers. 11,524. And here's the willful one, the big one. Willful serious. 1910-272, J2II. The employer did not immediately remove any fugitive grain dust accumulations whenever they exceeded 1/8 of an inch or 0.32 centimeters. Again, 0.32 centimeters. Come on, guys. Come on. 0.32 centimeters. At priority housekeeping areas pursuant to the housekeeping program for grain elevators. And 161,323. Citation 2, item 2. Willful serious. The employer did not promptly correct dust collection systems in the grain handling facility for malfunctioning or operating below design efficiency. 161,323 with that. Anyway, those are all proposed for a grand total of $536,965 in proposed penalties. Right? With that. And here. Well, that's... add a sound effect in there. Oh. Very, very good. Very, or do we need this one? Okay, here we have another one, October 3rd, out of Tampa. Tampa, Florida. Rather than address the 15 existing safety and health hazards cited by federal workplace safety inspectors in July 2023, a Pinellas Park boat manufacturer continues to jeopardize the safety and health of its workers, according to a follow-up inspection. So, a follow-up. So, July 2023, right? They came, now they had a follow-up. All right. They returned in March 2024 and discovered the company had not corrected hazardous conditions, including failing to institute a workplace respiratory protection program and procedures for workers required to wear tight-fitting respirators and failing to develop and maintain a written HAZCOM program. Right? So here we have failure to abate. And this looks like this is going to be a little bit something different. This is going to be some 1910-134 and 1915 shipyard here with this. So let's see. Again, I don't read this usually beforehand here. Hold on. We're also raking a lot of leaves today, so I am dry. Sorry for all the drinking of the water. Citation 1, item 1. Type of violation. Serious. The employer did not furnish employment and a place of employment with that were free of recognized hazards. So here we had a gantry crane was not periodically inspected at least once every 12 months, and that the gantry crane used by employees to lift boats and boat components during assembly activities had signs of corrosion and or damage. $4,610. Remember, the shipyard industry is a targeted industry by OSHA. Citation 1, item 2. Here. Hold on. Okay. Category 1 or 2 flammable liquids or Category 3 flammable liquids with a flash point below 100 degrees Fahrenheit were dispensed into containers without the nozzle and container being electrically interconnected. They were not bonded, which means you could have a static electric discharge creating a fire. $4,610. Citation 2, item 1. 1910-134. The employer did not provide a medical evaluation to determine the employee's ability to use a respirator before the employee was fit tested. Again, if you need this type of support, give us a call. 845-269-5772. I just arranged this one on Wednesday for a client. And it costs a hell of a lot less than $7,374. Citation 2, item 2, is a repeat serious. So all of these were, first one was serious. Second one is repeat serious. Third one is citation 2, item 2, repeat serious. No fit testing, $7,374. Citation 2, item 3, repeat serious. This is no HAZCOM training, $9,219. Citation 3, item 1, no advisory, no training on the paper. So, on Appendix D, of the respiratory protection standard, Here, we're going to go over to the camera first. I have to point this out because I would be remiss if I did not point this out. Let me get the web page up here. So we're going to go take a quick commercial break here, and I'm going to bring this up on the respiratory protection standard here. Hold on.
In an unpredictable world, one voice rises above the chaos. Meet Jim Polzo, a seasoned safety expert who's navigated through some of the most dangerous scenarios, from anthrax, explosive cleanups, disasters, and numerous environmental cleanups, and lived to tell the tale. Now he's bringing his wealth of knowledge, insights, and experiences to you through Safety Wars. From workplace hazards to the hidden dangers in your own home, Jim covers it all with his engaging storytelling. Safety Wars isn't just a podcast. It's your guide to a safer world. Join Jim Polzo and become part of the Safety Wars revolution. Available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and wherever you get your podcasts and videos. Safety Wars. Your safety is our mission.
All right, so here we have Appendix D here. All right, let's zoom in a little bit here. Now, here. All right, Appendix D. 2-1910-134. Respirators are an effective method of protection against designated hazards when properly selected and worn. Respirator use is encouraged, even when exposures are below the exposure limit, to provide an additional level of comfort and protection for workers. However, if a respirator is used improperly or not kept clean, the respirator itself can become a hazard to the worker. Sometimes workers may wear respirators to avoid exposures to hazards, even if the amount of hazardous substance does not exceed limits set by OSHA standards. If your employer provides respirators for your voluntary use, or if you provide your own respirator, you need to take certain precautions to be sure that the respirator itself does not present a hazard. You should do the following. 1. Read and heed all instructions provided by the manufacturer on use, maintenance, clearing, and cleaning and care, and warnings regarding the respirator's limitations. 2. Choose respirators certified for use to protect against the contaminant of concern. NIOSH certifies respirators. I'm paraphrasing. A label or a statement of certification should appear on the respirator or respirator packaging. It will tell you what the respirator is designed for and how much it will protect you. 3. Do not wear your respirator into atmospheres containing contaminants for which your respirator is not designed to protect against. For example, a respirator designed to filter dust particles will not protect you against gases, vapors, or very small solid particles of fumes or smoke. Keep track of your respirator so that you do not mistakenly use someone else's. So I mention this here, right, because how do I manage this? There are people, especially since COVID, that this is what they wear. Doesn't matter what job they're on, does not matter what they're doing, they are wearing respirators or the imitation respirators, right? Meaning non-NIOSH respirators, you know. No, I always still joke. We have a virus so deadly, so dangerous that we are wearing face coverings. Really? That deadly? Why aren't you wearing like a respirator, dude? You know, but I digress. I don't want to relive that. Very frustrating to me. So let's mosey on over. So that's what that is. So what do I do? I print out the Appendix D. I put a little mark on there, get my pen, and I write down name, signature, date. That's what I do. Name, signature, date, and the employee signs it if it's voluntary use. Because again, they did not cite them here, but I could see that being an issue. So here we have 33,187, and we got to remember to download that for our shipyard clients out there. That's what's going on out there. So let's see what else is going on with this, right? Now, let's finish up with this. U.S. Department of Labor reminds employers of responsibility to pay cleanup, recovery workers, proper wages, and Helene's aftermath. As states across the Southeast address Hurricane Helene's impacts, the U.S. Department of Labor reminds employers in disaster recovery and their workers that even when disaster strikes, worker protections apply. Now, this is my question for you, because you can look back at previous disasters where OSHA basically goes in from an enforcement to a compliance assistance organization with that. You don't believe me? We can show you the press releases on some of them. And what happens is a lot of times, and I'm going to bet some money on here. Oh, not money. I'll bet 50 cents on there. People come out of the woodwork to work on these disaster management jobs, disaster response jobs. They may be even the victims here. Your job disappears because it gets washed away. What ends up happening here is that these companies go and they think that they're going to pay people as independent contractors, or they're going to pay people off the books. Real bad idea. Pay people legitimate wages and everything. This actually happened to a company that I know of. They just decided to pull a fast one and say, we're going to pay everybody as an independent contractor, 1099 employee. And then they commenced to telling these folks when they had to show up to work. Guess what? They are now no longer independent contractors if you're telling them what time to show up to work. And at the end, they paid these folks, and then at the end of the job, this is Gulf Oil cleanup, people have been working 9 months, right? At the time, it was 26 weeks, I believe, that you had to work. They worked the 26 weeks. Now they're eligible for unemployment. They get laid off. End of the job. Laid off for no fault of their own. They try to collect unemployment because they've been working, and guess what? The employer did not pay into unemployment. So what the hell do you think happens? And so, well, they start going and doing an investigation. And what happened was the employer ended up paying $250,000 principal, not interest, $250,000 in back taxes. Big issue here. So beware of this stuff. All right. So again, they got to make sure that they maintain accurate records and pay workers when wages are due. Workers are particularly vulnerable during times of crisis. Employers that fail to comply with federal labor laws cause them and their families additional harm, like the communities stricken by hurricanes and other disasters. Workers are especially vulnerable after the fact. U.S. Department of Labor responds quickly to protect workers and ensure they are paid all of their legally earned wages and benefits, explained Wage and Hour Regional Administrator Juan Correa in Atlanta. At the same time, we stand ready to provide employers with the information and guidance they need to stay in compliance. The division is committed to strong enforcement of workplace protections for disaster recovery workers nationwide, including the states affected by Hurricane Helene. Right? So, big deal here, guys. Can't be doing this crap. Let's go to our next commercial break here.
Have you listened or watched the Safety War Show? It does stream live on the radio and on the streamers that we have. So if you have not taken a listen to Jim Bozell and what the hell he's doing every evening with Safety Wars, I would strongly encourage you to take a view or take a listen, whichever option is available for you, and take a listen to what the hell he has going on. It will take some deep dives and some information that you might be interested in.
Okay, that's what I have here. Let's see if there's any more information on this longshoreman strike or anything else here before we sign off, because, I mean, stuff's going on. And I mean, especially the stuff in Israel. I tell you, I want to do a Saturday program apart from this. No, not on the network here. With all this political stuff going on. I mean, it's incredible here. With what's going on politically, what's going on throughout the country here. So this is what I want you to do. I don't want anybody to go out there. No, I always call for calm, reason, logic, and everything else. Don't go out there and go nuts with the disaster stuff. Again, as I say, if you really want to get completely ready in a hurry, it takes about 2, maybe 3 weeks to get prepared. I don't think that's really necessary. Prioritize, assess, analyze, and act. The government recommends 4 days of food. Maybe you want to concentrate on that. Maybe you already have that. Food and water. And the government said, you know, I have be ready to go to evacuate. Get all your paperwork together. Get all your medications together. All that stuff. Do all of that beforehand. All right? And take your time. There's no need to panic here all the time. That's all I have to say here. And I'm going to attempt to be here on a Friday. Tomorrow. We'll see how it goes. But you got 3 programs this week. I try to do 3 programs minimum. You got 3. So we're going to try to do a Friday, and then one of these days we're going to do a political one. And I tell you what, we're going to see, and definitely afterwards, we got some things planned here where we're going to be talking about this. Trump working on details here with people. For Safety Wars, this is Jim Polzel. Good night.
The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are those of the host and its guest and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the company. Examples of analysis discussed within this podcast are only examples. They should not be utilized in the real world as the only solution available, as they are based only on very limited and dated open source information. Assumptions made within this analysis are not reflective of the position of the company. No part of this podcast may be reproduced, stored in a retrieval system, or transmitted in any form or by any means, mechanical, electronic, recording, or otherwise, without prior written permission of the creator of the podcast, Jay Allen.